Okay, our speaker is Judith, who will now share her experience, strength, and hope for 20 minutes on more about alcoholism. Go ahead, Judith. You're still muted, Judith.
Hi, I'm Judith. I'm a real compulsive eater, a selfaholic, and an Al-Anonic. And I'm just stepping in, really, as a speaker at the last minute. So what I thought I'd talk about, though, is something that we were talking about in our group this week, and more about alcoholism. I'm going to have a look at the stories, the examples that they give me. Coming over on page 30. And the reason I think it's relevant for me to look at them myself now, I have about 9 years off the food, but, and 3 years working with this chaos creating piece and really looking at my Al-Anonic and ACA behaviors that still, you know, come up, and I still bow down to them. And I still get stuck in obsessive thinking around certain things. I live in sometimes an illusion, like there's like a magic trick that I'm going to be able to pull off or something. And of course, all magic is an illusion, so it doesn't really exist. And so I wanted to look at these stories because for me, there's always a message in the examples they give. This book is so brilliant. I'm not going to talk about the whole chapter, just about the stories. So I think Mr. Carpet Slippers, and this is just my personal current momentary experience of the stories. I think Mr. Carpet Slippers on page 32 is really about a guy, you know, who used avoidance and distraction to and had some lurking notions that, you know, he wasn't really an alcoholic, or lurking notions that he could pull it off himself. So this story is really relevant to me because I need to ask myself about why, what is it that I still try to avoid within my behaviors that will eventually lead me back to feeling so irritated or agitated or doubtful or worried or not. The bottom line for me this week has really become apparent that the underlying cause of all my addictions is I think I'm going to have to pull it off myself because nothing else is coming or nothing else exists. And so that's where I will head when I start to avoid honesty about the fact that I can't just tell myself it's not happening when things are actually happening. Now, thank God I've got some recovery where the power greater than me steps in and kind of gives me big fat clues or drops some mini bombs on my life or even just minor little things that I go, that I need to pay attention to. I can't just avoid my life by being busy anymore. This was the last round of, or two rounds ago of BBA using the chaos creating, I started to realize that I had led a very, very, very busy life. And if I tell you what my life is now, you can't, it's something that somebody asked me recently is what is it about this life that I still think is embarrassing or something like that? And that I'm so familiar with a very busy schedule and a very busy girl, and I'm such a busy person. The quality or the identity of who I am was busy. And now I can have these downtimes where I'm like, well, I don't feel like doing anything because I'm retired and I'm going to do nothing. And instead of getting too busy with program, it's like, okay, well, I'll do an amount and I'll see what the next day brings and that kind of stuff. So anyway, so that's a little bit about Mr. Carpet Slippers, and what I can be looking for today is, am I trying to, you know, keep my addiction at bay with any kind of lurking notion that if I'm just keep busy or I just avoid, I'll be fine. I think Jim's story, he's the next guy we start to meet on page 32 or page 30. Yeah, 35 maybe. Oh, here we go. So I think Jim is he's a man who didn't enlarge his spiritual life. Like he didn't go after that. And I was just posting a note to my group about, yeah, AKA, you know, I take the light, you know, if I take the lightweight steps, or I take a couple of steps and I don't do all the steps, or I don't really grasp step one. And, you know, if I don't really know what my problem is in step one, the rest of the steps will mean nothing whatsoever, and they'll do nothing whatsoever, because I would have missed what my problem is. So anyway, I think Jim's story is about him, you know, thinking he can get away with a little bit, and, you know, why not? And then he comes sort of face to face with this men, you know, like, and I'll translate it for myself, the inability to metabolize negative sensitivities that I have to life, people and things, situations. And I think that was Jim. Jim was very sensitive, not overly sensitive, you know, but suddenly he realizes, right? Suddenly he realizes he's putting whiskey in his milk. He's hiding his insanity inside what looks like completely, in his case, was a pleasant enough life. But he was having a negative feeling. He was having an emotion. He was irritated or something. We'll read about him. He had a nervous disposition. Yeah. And so a nervous disposition, that absolutely qualifies me to take a look at Jim's story. Yeah. I've been nervous my whole life since I was about 8, 9. And I got nervous because I couldn't handle what was going on in life. And I started to think I better take care of that and start to manage everybody around me in order to make sure they perceive me the same way, you know, all this nervousness. And then I had horrible fears that nobody, you know, wasn't fitting in, or nobody liked me. And those carried around, even though they have changed and I became a big extrovert, actually. And, but, you know, I'm an extrovert with some highly sensitive spots, which is not easy when you run around the world, you know, like that. Anyway, so anything that threatens Jim, anything that threatens me in any side of mine away, starts to make me very, very agitated. And I get this nervous disposition returns. And so I think that's what his story was really about. And of course, I have no other solution anymore for my mental disposition. We're talking about a mental illness, a mental disposition that I can't just conjure up, don't be nervous. I can't conjure up, don't worry about that. I can't conjure up, let it go. Like, if I could let it go, I'd have let it go, but it's agitating, so I obviously didn't let it go. And I come face to face with that sort of inability to mentally metabolize that stuff. I can't do it. And then it affects my body. And the next thing, or maybe it's vice versa, I'll react suddenly. And you know, I'm sure he didn't mean to, but it said suddenly it occurred to him it would be a great idea to hide his whiskey in milk. And my friend Sarah, who gave me that great analogy of hiding something inside something that looks better, it can happen to me at any time. I can hide how I'm feeling inside looking happy. I'm not very good at it anymore, because if something gets me, it really gets me now. But I can hide a displeasing experience that maybe I'm letting somebody walk over me, or maybe I want to speak up, but I didn't, you know, the Al-Anonic stuff. I can hide that in a kind of pleasing the other person state. That's not useful. It's not useful to lie to myself that this is acceptable and dunk it in milk, which looks like and makes it look, you know what I mean? It's like I'm trying to hide what I'm truly feeling or I truly need to experience. But mentally, I think, well, I'll just, you know, I'll you know, I don't know. I'll either extort some you like me from you, or I will press up against something. I mean, there's 100 ways it sort of shows itself. So I think that's what Jim's, I mean, there's a lot more in there. Of course, this is just my current interpretation, but there's 100 other things I could tell you about Jim's story. He can't think straight. You know, he's got a completely distorted proportion, lack of proportion. He's, you know, it's insanity what happens. But then it asks us to see if we have any simple justifications or simple reasons we give ourselves, because they're not usually that convoluted for me. When I was compulsively eating, it was a very simple experience I got agitated, doubtful, or worried. I got nervous, you didn't like me, and I couldn't impress. And the next thing I know, I'm going to have to, you know, it didn't grow over time. It would be suddenly I'd experienced the need to calm that down. And the only way I knew how to do it was to shove up like a whole cake in my face, usually. But it says insanely trivial excuses, insanely, which simply means I can't control, right? I'm having an absurd reaction. I'm having absurd thinking about how I should deal with this if I manage to even be aware of it. Look, I've had some levels of recovery now where I can see what's going on oftentimes. And then other times I need people to walk me backwards and go back through the scenario, just like these stories tell us that the guys had to help him take a look, go back. But invariably, if somebody calls me up and I talk to them about, I don't know, it could be that they just stuffed something in their face. We always go walking backwards because there's nothing to do with what just went in their face as far as compulsive eating. Or somebody blew up at their husband again. And it's like, okay, let's walk backwards to see what happened, like maybe a week ago, even a year ago, usually not that long ago. But we can see that it was an insane like desire to manage something or do something and a tiny threat. And, you know, and often my threats with close members of family, they look like historic threats dressed up as current times. And thank God for some level of recovery in my last fifth step, where I truly got this, something came through me, the spirit came through me, the truth came upon me, which is, hold on, my husband is not acting like my dad. Like, he's not my dad and he's not acting like my dad. He's just having a moment, and he has very rare moments. The last thing I need to do is think he doesn't care about me. The man adores me. I've been blessed with that. So I can't mistake him for something from before, but something I've mistaken about myself, needing to be cared by other people, all these other things can easily get mistaken. So I think Jim just didn't have enough awareness yet. And of course that's why he suddenly thought it would be a bright idea to have one and then have two, you know. I'll go to the jaywalker now. Page 38. Again, I'm just looking at the stories. I'm not really going to address the entire, it's just a magnificent chapter as most of them are. But I think the jaywalker is simply like a metaphor for a distorted point of view. I've always thought about this point of view they talk about in the book. Am I willing to have my point of view changed? Well, if I start looking at the jaywalker, and I mean, I could easily, I'm not going to tell you my stories now. I've got those recorded, but somewhere, I don't know, somebody asked me and I don't know where they are, so maybe I need new ones, I don't know. But I recorded these stories in my own words about my own life, and my food one is just, it's the most obvious thing I've ever heard. Like, I was playing with friggin' fire, I was playing with death, like I was playing with thousands and thousands of calories of sugar, flour, salt, and fat a day, and I could have died. Like, I had two times where my heart jumped. Like, it jumped and I knew, and this could be it. You know, it was a crazy experience. One time, back of my head nearly blew off. I mean, I really felt like it was going to absolutely explode. It was just an overload of sugar. And how I ever woke up from a sleep that I had that night, I have no idea. I didn't sleep much, but I honestly thought it's over now. And maybe it's the only way it's going to be over. But it wasn't. It wasn't. But it got me ready to be ready. It got me ready to be willing. It got me fearful enough. So I think the jaywalker story, we can use the jaywalker story to really, I think page 38, so or 39, that or 37, somewhere down here. But anyway, the jaywalker, no, somewhere in here. Anyway, I know it's in here somewhere, it's in these pages. But the jaywalker for me is really about risking, like, I risk because I'm insane, meaning I can't really determine what is true from false. I can't, because I have an obsessive compulsive desire to have it again, to do it again. And nothing's going to get in that way. Obsession. It's just, you know, I wrote it in my big book and I'll never, you know, that's the greatest thing. A thought that outweighs every other thought, a delusion to mislead the mind, and an elusive thought is it's erroneous. It's full of errors. And I've got a computer in my head that just won't quit sometimes. That's how it was. And certainly too, about, look, sometimes I will look at things that are slightly different, but I think the jaywalker is really about thinking he's unique. A jaywalker is someone who thinks they're unique and can beat the odds. And sometimes with some smaller things in my experience, especially this, any clues, I would call them, anything that I write on a list to say that I don't want to keep doing those things, but I keep doing them, things in my life, the way I show up, or the way I need you to like me, or the way, those kinds of things, the way I used to try to save my mother, a good, I don't know, 75 to 90% of that has been lifted. Amazingly, I can actually have incredibly nice, wonderful days with her. But it's like trying to prove my point. These things, I felt like I was like unique, meaning I have to do this myself. All of them lead to one simple line. I've got to do it myself because nothing else is going to help me. And this point of view is so distorted, but for some reason, I will cross the walk one more time or cross the threshold without pressing the button to see if the red light's going to come on or all the red lights are on for the cars crossing. I just cross the road. And so that's how it used to be nearly all the time before I dealt with a lot of stuff. And look, I went through Al-Anon, I went through ACA, I went through SLAA, I went through Debtors Anonymous, I went through OA. I did a lot of work. But then let's talk about Fred's story, because I still had an ego to protect. And I think Fred's story is about ego protection. And so I got a lot of knowledge in program for decades. I'm not talking a couple of years, decades. But I don't think I ever knew what my actual first step problem was. I don't. And it's like, I knew I had a problem with people, and I knew I had a problem with addicts because I kept ending up with them. And then I knew I was an addict when it came to food, but I didn't know that I had a really bad problem. Like, I can't stay off that stuff once I start. And I become someone I didn't mean to become, doing things I didn't mean to do, acting in ways I didn't mean to act. Dr. Jekyll, Mrs. Hyde. I didn't know I had that problem. And I didn't know. And I don't think Fred knew either. I think Fred knew about some information about those things, but I don't know if he had utterly like understood the utter lack of defense that I have, or the utter powerlessness. And this last round, you know, when I came in back into program about 9 years ago, and I went back into the food, you know, program, because I had 3 years of horrific relapse based on an ego problem. I couldn't protect my ego when my life was so high up and so damn good. On the outside, you would have said she's a winner. You know, I was a size 6 DKNY suit. That's who I was, running around city to city, living in America, flying to Australia, flying here, flying to Switzerland. I was the knees of the bees, and I was the business. And I could not handle it. I couldn't handle it. I was far too sensitive. And I was still so worried, as successful as I was still so freaking worried that you didn't like me, didn't approve of me, and I was a fucking fake. Excuse my language, I'm not supposed to swear. So I think Fred's story is about that. I have a mental blank spot, just like Fred. I am guaranteed to go back to old behavior. I am guaranteed to worry about who I am in your presence. I am guaranteed that I will end up having to put something on that. And it probably, if I'm not building upon everything I've gained in these programs and everything that I believe this day and I have faith in. I mean, I really have faith that I feel one more often now than I have ever felt, with some power that I can't really tell you what it is, but I know it is everywhere and everything. And I am part of it and I cannot be separate. Yet there'll be moments when that old stuff comes back and I do feel separate and I do feel like I'm alone and I do feel I've got to figure it out myself again. That's my addiction now. I've got to figure it out because no one else is coming. So I think for me, it's like as long as I grasp step one fully, and I think more about alcoholism is here, they're not talking about more about my food problem. They're not talking about it, right? They're not talking about I've got a problem with food. They're talking about I have a problem with life, and it always leads me back to needing, for me, the drug of no choice at all, which is absolute compulsive eating. So I think that's, you know, I think that those stories for me, because I'm running a group and I was in those stories now for a couple of weeks, they're really clear to me about my life, myself, about who this is now and how they could, you know, how they apply to me today. And I didn't get into the minor ways, more of the minor ways, but there's a few key ones on the list. But it did help me identify again very clearly, and I'll finish on this, that I'm utterly defeated when it comes to any kind of reasoning with my mental capacity to overcome any of it. I have no ability and no defense. The great news, though, is I truly experience some level of some beautiful, I don't know what it is, that gives me a level of calm when calamity does hit. And it's happened over the last 2 years, and certainly the last year and a half, there's been some really good stuff where I don't even know how I was that calm when I, you know, ended up in hospital and all kinds of stuff, got a cancer threat, all these kinds of things where I remained calm. And yet today, it won't take a whole lot to rock me off that boat with some minor things. And even saying they're minor is already a problem. And so now I'll take the word back and say, they just are, they happen to be, and I'll have to keep building upon and opening up to a power greater than myself, because that's what happened. I did not, you know, I cannot ever say that I haven't enlarged my spiritual life and I got it. I know there's more. I know there isn't something else coming. Anyway, I'll stop there. Thanks for letting me jump in and sharing. Thanks.
Thanks, Judith. Hang on, I'm going to stop the recording.